Coming up, we hear from Jackie Chapman as she tells us about her fascinating journey into the paleo lifestyle, and who now uses her knowledge of paleo and her 15 years as a therapist helping people with eating disorders to help people get to know the gluten-free and paleo lifestyle in a hands-on experience at her retreats.
Hello, Jackie. Thank you for being on the Low Carb Paleo Show. It was my pleasure to meet you at the Paleo FX 2014. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Chef Alan. It was great meeting you at all the events that we met during Paleo FX. It seemed like every place I went to eat, there you were.
Yeah. I was assistant to the person in charge of all the dinners. So I was on site everywhere.
And the food was amazing.
Well, I can't take your credit for that, but definitely, you know, all the chefs and the catering businesses did a great job. So we're very lucky that way. Well, let's talk about you. Can you tell us a little bit about your personal background and professional background?
Well, I have a long history of working with people with eating disorders and addictions. I started my career as a social worker and as a therapist back in the 90s, working in drug rehabs and other locked types of facilities. After quite a few years of doing that, I took a break and went to work at a family business that my brother ran, which was an insurance agency, totally out of what I had ever done before, and did that for about 13 years. And then in April of 2007, my mom was diagnosed with colon cancer, and it threw the family into a tailspin, and unfortunately, her journey didn't have a positive outcome. She actually passed away 10 weeks after her diagnosis, and it was shocking to me. It was one of those moments, or one of those experiences that changes your life. And so at that point, after the kind of the shock wore off, which took a few months, I wanted to find out how this happened, how a 62-year-old woman in this society could die of a completely preventable and treatable disease in such a short period of time with no outward signs that there was anything going on with her. Right. And so I started a personal and a professional journey. I went back to school to learn about holistic nutrition and to learn about the disease process that was related to food and how we ate and how we treated our bodies. And so when I started school, I was actually vegetarian, had a slight stint of being vegan, which was not a good thing for me, and then finally came around after a couple years and finishing school to the primal paleo and low-carb diet. And that was life-changing for me. In the process, it's, you know, I don't tell my story often, and sometimes it's emotional, especially with Mother's Day just passing. So I'm going to try to, you know, keep this as factual as possible. But when we have a trauma, when we have a shock, it does a lot of things to our entire system that we don't realize is going on. And so when my mom passed away, the shock of it was really kind of a culminating point in my health where I started to lose weight very quickly. I started to not be able to sleep. I had this this motivation and this drive for health. And so I started running and I started training for this and training for that. And I was going to be the healthiest person possible. But it was coming from a place of fear. Right. And so I had kind of run myself into the ground. And I was like, you know, basically I traveled, you know, just trying to find this perfect health. And what I did is I made myself sick. And in that process, I had to slow down. And I had to understand that what I was doing to myself was probably similar to that process that was going on with my mom. It's like she didn't know what was going on, but she just kept going and going and going. And what that led me to was adrenal fatigue and exhaustion and depression and all kinds of not pleasant things. So again, it was a journey back to health that led me to the paleo, primal, and low carb lifestyle. And then in that, and with my education, opening up my retreat to help other people educate themselves about how food choices affect our lives and how lifestyle is so important in overall health.
Yes, I understand. Can you tell us how you went from vegetarian to paleo primal and what made you decide to go that route?
Well, you know, in 2010, when I was in school, I had the fortune of meeting one of the mentors and started seeing her professionally, and she started teaching me about adrenal fatigue. And it was basically a friendship and education that opened my eyes about what I was doing to myself. And a lot of the food choices also came from me understanding what my psyche was doing. And, you know, I had gone through a period where I was vegetarian and, like I said, vegan, and I was craving meat. I was like, you know, it was almost a moral decision. I wanted to be vegetarian, vegan, because I was scared of cancer and I had believed a lot of the hype. You know, meat causes cancer. My mom died of cancer and right. Like everything was about cancer. And mm-hmm. I became torn in how to, you know, understand what my body was saying and what my mind was saying. And so I would go back and forth. I would put, you know, organic chicken in my cart at Trader Joe's, and I'd get to to the checkout counter and say, you know, I'm sorry, I've changed my mind, right? You know, I would go back and forth for months right. with that moral decision and that, you know, what I was taught was the right way. And then again, you know, like I said, when I went back to school, they taught me about properly sourced meat, and they taught me the difference, and I understood that what my misconceptions were not based on what was wrong with the food. It was just kind of how it was sourced, and so I had to reevaluate a lot of my thinking, which was difficult. I had to reevaluate meat, and I had to reevaluate eggs and fat and sugar and really understand what these foods were doing to and for my body. And it was a long process. It was right. it took trying things out, and, you know, again, through and I didn't talk much about it, but throughout the, you know, my history, I was up and down in weight, and then had gastric bypass in the 90s, and wow. and so I wasn't able to eat a lot of food, so I kind of felt better eating vegetarian because I wasn't able to assimilate meat, and so it was kind of going back and forth. Well, you know, if you listen to your body is saying you don't feel well when you eat meat, but you really do need, you know, it was just a back and forth struggle with myself until mm-hmm. I allowed someone to come in and say, what would happen if? What would the result be if this were not true? And allowed me to question my own beliefs about my body, about fueling myself and loving myself. And it was all tied together. And someone right. allowed me an arena to kind of separate those things and try and go, well, what if? What if? What if I did eat chicken? What would happen? And then I ate chicken and nothing happened and I felt better. And then, well, yes. what if I do this? And that's kind of the way I approach paleo as well. I've been following kind of the paleo template for about 2 to 3 years. And I was very strict in the beginning. I was like, no grains, no legumes, no dairy, I was very, very rigid with myself. And I needed to do that in the beginning to understand what my body did and didn't need.
Right.
And again, it's like, well, what would happen if I ate white rice? What would happen? Would I not be paleo anymore? And so that's kind of the path that I'm on now is, again, reestablishing what works for me in this current life that I have, which is different than where I was 3 or 4 years ago with adrenal fatigue. Hmm. You know, it's that journey that we all have to take as we heal, as we grow, as we change. We get to say, well, what if I had some raw cheese today? What would happen? I would either not feel so good because I should, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I react to it sometimes because for me that's my experience. Sometimes I react to dairy and sometimes I don't. It's really dependent on the level of stress I have and the level of, you know, the amount of sleep I'm getting and kind of the social atmosphere. If I'm feeling stressed out, maybe I can't eat these things. But if things have been really good, then, you know, some raw dairy is kind of awesome. And
yes,
learning
yes.
what we can and can't do based on where we are and not a dogmatic system or not a numbers game of, or I had cheese, you know, this week, so I can't have it anymore because that was my cheat. I really tried to separate what I eat from who I am as a person. It's like, right. it's not a moral decision anymore. It's just a choice. And that was part of that freedom in the paleo lifestyle, was being able to separate a moral choice from just a, well, what would happen if?
Right. So on the practical side, I'm seeing you're addressing two issues, the emotional, psychological, and the practical. So could you give us some example of what to look for on the emotional side or what to observe, and then on the practical side, what suggestions and how to move into low-carb paleo diet?
Well, on the emotional side, it's really important to not have nevers in your life. That's not true because I'm gluten-free all the time. So that's my one never for me personally. Right. But there aren't a lot of I'll never have this or I'll never have that. That's, for a lot of people, that's too black and white, and it makes it too rigid of a lifestyle. I think we need to find out what we can handle physically at a time, and then work within that framework of being inclusive as opposed to exclusive. Well, I can't have these three things, and so I feel deprived, as opposed to looking at all the other things that we can have. And so that goes into the practical as well. There are no nevers. There are just not a lot of hard and fast rules about food. I think food should be fun. Mm-hmm. I think it should be colorful, and I think it should be enjoyable. And again, that goes into the practical and the emotional kind of tie hand in hand to me. If I'm not enjoying what I'm doing, or if I'm feeling stressed out, I'm not going to put the effort I need into doing home cooking or going to the farmer's market. If I find it a burden, or I find that it's something I have to do, then I'm not as likely to enjoy doing it, and I'm not as likely to follow through. Really is finding the enjoyment in real food, in the celebration of food. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, the Food Network has blown up because people want to celebrate food. They want it. It's inclusive and it's social, and it has an emotional aspect to it. Yeah. People get connected to the types of food they grew up with, whether it's good or bad memories.
In Europe, food is a very important part of life and social life. And that's how not only we celebrate, but we also gather and we have fun together. Even if the food is not special, just hanging out and have a good time with friends it's more important than obsessing about what you can eat, what you cannot eat, and make yourself sick about it.
That was one of the things we lost when my mom passed away. My mom was very big into doing elaborate family dinners. They were only a few times a year, and they were always traditional Jewish, Polish, Middle European types of foods. Very right. traditional in our family. And so when my mom passed away, we kind of lost that. And that's what I'm doing now, is trying to recreate the recipes that my grandmother and my mother used to make, which was chopped liver, very, very healthy for us. You know, a lot of people shy away from it. That's one of my childhood memories. And so to now have permission to eat that, it's like, oh, this is awesome. I can have, you know, chopped liver, and I can have, you know, my grandma used to make these great cabbage stews that were, you know, very inexpensive to make. And, you know, she would use a lot of potatoes. I don't use as many potatoes, but I'm finding, again, as I start to heal myself, potatoes are not an issue for me. So I'm able to, again, recreate some of those traditional foods and recreate those memories for my family and for new families. I mean, I went to a Seder with a friend that's new in the desert, and we were able to compare family recipes that she grew up with and I grew up with. And it wasn't foreign. It was just home cooking that was familiar to us. And so I can go back to those memories and those smells and those feels. And the kind of thought of someone who has been an immigrant is that things were done in moderation. You didn't eat everything all the time. There was leftovers. And that when my grandmother made cookies, they were very small, and you would get one cookie as dessert. It wasn't about a package of cookies that was gone in a day. It's like that was kind of inbred in me.
Right.
And I forgot about that. And so as I unraveled some of these emotional issues, I went back to the practical of what did my grandmother do?
Yeah.
My grandmother didn't buy bottled salad dressing. She just didn't. We didn't have that actually until my mother started doing the shopping as my grandparents got older. And again, we had that traditional multi-generational family where when my grandparents got older, my mother took over. And that's when everybody's health started to decline because she westernized our eating. And so I'm just going back and rewinding what I learned as a young child.
Yeah, you're going back to your emotional sources, the connection between family and food and how it fits your lifestyle. Yes.
And I remember again my grandmother taking me to the farmer's market and teaching me how to pick a peach or, you know, to know when a certain piece of produce was going to be at its best and to, you know, she taught me how to haggle in a farmer's market. And that was one of those skills that now in my adult life is really valuable. It's like for all these years I thought, why would she teach me this?
Yeah.
But she must have known.
Same experience with my grandmother. You know, she had a small farm and she taught me about growing food, you know, in a small garden and then go to the market and trade whatever we could not produce, trade for bread or for meat, just to do a little trading on the side, you know.
Yeah.
And it worked out. It worked out.
And that was the thing. If somebody had a piece of meat and somebody had a piece of bread and you sat together, then you had a sandwich. And that was kind of what they taught me. And so going back to that type of thinking and creating a community where people can, not everybody has to be an expert at everything, people can learn to share and to barter and to mutually be beneficial for each other as opposed to just taking what, you know, and I think that's also part of this community, is it allows for people to do what they're good at and to share those things and to actually help benefit a community.
I understand that you have a eating for wellness retreat program. Can you tell us about it?
Well, and I do. What I do is have people come to the retreat and what it is, 4-bedroom, 3-bathroom residence that is 100% gluten-free. People come for 2, 3, 4 days, and I teach them about food quality. We do cooking classes. So they learn how to make a low-carb breakfast. They understand what carbs are and how they react in the body. And so they spend some time in a completely low-carb house learning how to make that transition in their own home. And so I set it up in a way that is very easy to replicate in other people's homes. All the appliances are from places like Target or Kohl's, so it's not difficult. But people learn about whole foods, about different spices and vegetables and fruit, and teaching them how to source meat and finding options in their own area. So it's really educational on that level, but it's also very relaxing and restful because we have a pool, we have a jacuzzi, and a lot of what I do with people is, again, helping them tell their story and unwinding kind of their misconceptions about their own life. So it's practical in that we do a lot of cooking, hands-on, go to the farmer's market. We've got some local farms that we can go out and talk to farmers. We go to the Trader Joe's, the grocery stores, do a lot of label reading, so it's practical on that level.
Right.
But we also spend a lot of time just hanging out and telling our stories and understanding our relationship with food. And so that's kind of the more holistic approach. So we go on hikes. And again, in that setting, people let down their walls, and again, they tell their stories. And we do a lot of, well, what would happen if? And, well, what if that were different? And it helps people kind of get their grounding in making lifestyle changes. And then, you know, they go home and they implement those changes, and we do a lot of follow-up, more so on the lifestyle change and how to implement that in their own life, negotiating things like social events and family reunions. Those can be difficult for people when they make a lifestyle change. Mm. So we do things on both the practical and on the emotional level, because I think it's important to kind of tap into both and give people permission to make lifestyle changes and to show them that it can be flavorful and it can also be social and, you know, it doesn't have to be so scary.
No. And the misconception usually is when you have to go on either gluten-free or paleo diet, a lot of people go, oh my God, what am I going to eat? And they get freaked out. And So what you're offering is a very important service and trying to educate people on the practical end and the emotional and teach them how to connect the two and understand.
And I think people like seeing what somebody else is doing. I mean, a lot of times what people like to do is they like to look through my pantry. They like to look through my spices. And because they don't, the grocery store is so overwhelming that people don't know where to start. And so another one of the services, you know, outside of the retreat is I go to people's homes and I go through their cabinets with them and we read labels and we find alternatives to the things that are their deal breakers. And lots of people have deal breakers. You know, for me, for a long time, ketchup was a deal breaker. Ketchup was a deal breaker for me. I thought, if I can't have ketchup, I'm not going to be able to do this.
You can make your own, ketchup from scratch if you want to.
Well, and I do now, but in the beginning, that was one of those things that I had to wean myself off of. Mayonnaise was another one. Now I make, you know, my own mayonnaise in a minute with a immersion blender every week. And life is good. But in that transition, people don't know that it's really very simple. And so I need to show them. You can make mayonnaise in a minute, or you can buy this stuff that you don't even know what it is. And so I think, you know, the internet is great for this kind of stuff. And there's lots of videos and there's lots of, you know, Facebook groups. And I'm, you know, part of several of the largest. Right. But I think being in someone's kitchen and helping them cook the way I was with my grandmother and her showing me, no, this is the size that it should be. Or this is, you know, you shake the pan this way if you want to get this kind of caramel. You can't really do that in a recipe. And I remember, you know, in junior high school having home economics and having cooking and having sewing. And it feels like it's a lost art. It's like you either go to culinary school or you don't know how to cook. And I think home cooking and knowing how to feed yourself is really important. I mean, I'd like to start working with some of the, and I haven't reached out yet, but to reach out with some of the middle school, because that's when children should start really becoming self-sufficient with their food. They can make food choices, they can voice their preferences, and they need to learn to get into the kitchen and start to feed themselves in a healthful way, because this is where it starts. I mean, you know, maybe younger is fine with supervision, but usually about the 10, 11, 12-year-old age, they're safe enough with knives, and they understand the concept of burning themselves. And with some supervision, it can be life-changing. I know for me, that's where kind of my weight gain and weight issue started, was at about 11 years old. And there was no solution. There was no, well, let's go do a cooking class. No, what my mom's solution was is she took me to a diet doctor. It's sad. I mean, things have changed that's not so readily available. But children need to learn how to cook. They need to know, with maybe the allowance that they get, instead of buying the pies and the cookies and the chips, maybe they could, you know, pool their money together the way my grandparents did or your grandparents did, and create a place where they can create a meal for themselves.
Fortunately, we have a generation of two of women that either did not want to cook or cannot cook, or because they are professionally very active, they just choose not to cook. I'm seeing that there seems to be an interest again for young women to learn to cook by themselves, and so you see a lot of classes happening locally, and which is a good thing.
I'm also becoming involved in some of the local cooking classes because people need to not be afraid of simple things. And that's what, you know, you don't have to be a master chef to be able to feed yourself. It really is much simpler than people want to make it out to be. Most of the meals that I make, and I post a lot on Facebook, are really 30-minute meals that people can make with just a little bit of planning ahead. Sometimes, you know, I'll do something elaborate over the weekend. I made some slow-cooked barbecue ribs, and they were awesome. They weren't necessarily as low-carb as I would normally do, but they were a treat, and they required some slow cooking, and that's always fun when you have the time. But most meals can really be done in about 30 to 35 minutes if you plan ahead. I'm really trying to hone back my You know, I'm originally from LA, where we have a farmer's market every day of the week, and you can go out and get, you know, Whole Foods, Trader Joe's. Now, being in the desert for about a year and a half, there's only two farmer's markets that I can get to during the week, and so I'm learning to plan better, stock up differently. And right. It's a different, again, phase of my learning in this lifestyle, because when you have access, as I did in LA, to organic, gorgeous produce all year long, all, you know, at every corner, because, you know, in California we can get produce that you can't get in most parts of the country year round. Right. So we get very spoiled. Now I'm here in the desert, only 2 hours out of LA, and the food is different. And so it requires relearning, because, again, you know, I could walk to a farmer's market. Now it's a 20-mile drive, and so I have to plan differently, because, again, you don't want to use up that much gas. You don't want to be in a holistic lifestyle and create more damage to the universe while you're seeking out your organic produce.
Yeah,
right. You know? So again, I'm learning again to adjust to a lifestyle, and again teaching people how to do that in the process, because it was a lot easier before. Now I'm going, well, maybe it's not that easy to find organic, or maybe it's not that easy to find grass fed. You know, so again, it's a different education that I'm getting for myself that I'm also able to pass on to other people. One of the things that I'm doing is starting the Slow Food Desert Cities movement, because we don't have an active slow food organization here. We somehow petered out in the last couple of years. I want to resurrect that, because I think it's important that when you live in a place that doesn't have access to organic food on every corner, that we have to put that extra effort in to make sure it's available to those that need it.
Another positive side about food that I've learned is that food is a common ground for any social or even race background, whether it's whites, you know, Mexican, black. I mean, I've had I have a couple of friends in Austin that organize meals just to get the neighborhood together, and because it's a mixed neighborhood, and you know, some people get suspicious and everything. And once you introduce the food, so it's a potluck, and then everyone shares their recipe. And they get to talk about their background, like you know, talking about the grandmothers and the food culture behind it. Then everybody gets all of a sudden, the common interest is food, and it gets people together. It doesn't separate them like typically society is doing.
And that's the thing. With home cooking, you can do that. And it was funny, because I just went to a potluck weekend before last. And everybody was doing home cooking, and everybody had to write out what the ingredients. So those of us with, you know, food sensitivities would be able to eat freely. Right. And I know, you know, it's like, even though people's cultures were different, and even though there was a mix of vegetarians and vegans and paleo and, you know, people who just eat whatever, you know, who don't have a food philosophy or a food template, everyone seemed to enjoy the food and ask for recipes and talk about the commonality. What I find is I go to other types of social gatherings where people aren't so food-oriented and bring, and no disrespect to people who don't cook, but will bring a fruit tray or, you know, KFC or something like that. And there's less to talk about. There's less commonality in food that isn't prepared by hand.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That, you know, someone brings a pizza, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's Domino's, that's awesome. But, like, someone who makes a pizza, like, well, dude, how'd you do that? That's, you know, that is what people connect with, is the artistry of cooking.
Right,
you
right.
Know, and that's what I really enjoy, is teaching people to be their own artist. I don't really like writing out recipes, because I think it limits people to my taste preference.
Yeah, right.
I like... Yeah, I mean, with baking, you need recipes. With cooking, I don't think you need recipes. I think you need taste buds, and I think you need an adventuresome spirit and the willingness to eat some bad food sometimes.
Right,
and
right.
So, like, some things don't turn out pretty, but they taste really good, or they, you know, they look beautiful, but you got the wrong spice, or it was too much basil this time. Like, you have to be willing to have a bad dish. I mean, we go to restaurants and have bad food all the time, pay lots of money for it. Why do we get so offended when we're just experimenting?
People don't like to fail, do they?
And I get a lot of, you know, when I do recipes, well, I would have done this with this. Well, that's great. Then that's your recipe, and enjoy that, because, again, I have my own flavor preferences. So right. Not everybody likes those. I mean, I did a dish again for an event, and I personally love capers. The person who, you know, whose party it was didn't prefer capers. Luckily, I didn't put a lot in, but that's one of those things, you know, love it or hate it. But, you know, people need to experiment. People need to be willing to go, you know what, I didn't like that dish because I don't like capers. Not, I didn't like that dish because it was gross.
Right.
Like,
right.
We need to kind of figure some things out. And Food should be fun. There's, like, there's nothing kind of that we really get in life that we can have so much control over and so many variations. And people limit themselves to, like, something that comes in a box or a bag. No disrespect, but it's kind of sad limiting when people talk about whole food being restrictive. It's like, and you're going to a menu that has like 20 different choices, and you're telling me my life is restrictive. It's like, really?
Right. So, well, you know, part of it is the brainwashing that the food corporation are putting on us. You know, it's like, for the sake of convenience or simplicity, stop by our place, you know, drive through and grab something on the go so you don't have to work so hard. Have you watched the movie Like Water for Chocolate?
I have not.
Well, if you get a chance, watch it. And it's a little bit, you know, they push to the limits a little bit, but it's basically, it shows in a dramatic way the emotions that we put in our food when we prepare food for other people.
Mm. Oh, I'll have to check that out. Yeah.
It's a wonderful movie. It's Mexican, but it's very well done. And you'll laugh, you'll cry. You know, it's all over the place when it goes to emotion. But you see this woman that loves to cook, and whatever state of emotional state is reflects into the food or gets into the food.
Yeah.
And when people eat her food, they pick up her emotion as well.
Yeah, and I can relate to that. I don't follow recipes, so if my mood will dictate what I'm going to cook for that day or what I find at the farmer's market. It seems to be emotion-driven, but more in a positive way than in the way it used to be, where it was obsessive and limiting. Now food is just an expression of kind of how I feel for the day. And so it takes on a different attitude. And food shouldn't be frightening. It shouldn't be... Oh my God, this is horrible.
Do you find yourself in a different frame of mind when you cook for yourself or you cook for other people? As in, you're going to a party and...
Sometimes I get a little anxious if I'm cooking. And it was funny because I had two back-to-back events last weekend. One was the garden party, and my usual MO is to do a few dishes just in case somebody doesn't like one. I've always got a backup. This time I decided to not do that and just do one dish and enjoy the rest of the afternoon. The other thing is another, it was a girls' night party, and I would usually, again, do a couple different things. And this afternoon, I decided instead of even preparing the dish ahead of time, I was going to go get a massage and prepare the dish at the party. And it turned out fabulous. So I think I used to be very anxious, and now I'm finding that it's just much more fun. And everybody's, again, going to have a preference, and they're either going to like it or they're not. And again, when I cook for my bed and breakfast guests, I try to do things that are familiar but different. So I usually do, you know, eggs a couple different ways for them. And in the beginning, I was anxious. What if they don't like them? Well, you know what? What if they do? And I've always had positive results. So in the beginning, I was anxious for groups of people that I don't know. Family is always difficult because they're not gluten-free, and they're just always oppositional with my food. So I've kind of given up with family. But with friends and with guests, I'm becoming much more adventuresome because I think people appreciate that. And if they want the same thing, they wouldn't necessarily come to this type of place. So I try to make it as exciting for people. And again, I keep it traditional as well. So when I have guests, I'll always introduce them to fermented foods or to some form of greens or some form of vegetable that they wouldn't normally choose. And so I always make that available. So I'm becoming more adventuresome because I'm giving people more choices.
When people book or come to your house, do they select you just because you're gluten-free, paleo, or... they don't care, typically.
Well, you know, it's funny, for the retreat guests, it's always because they want the paleo experience, or the, you know, the gluten-free experience, because again, we're paleo primal. I do dairy depending on, you know, the situation. So it's not strictly paleo, but it is always 100% gluten-free. So that's always, you know, the standard here. As far as the bed and breakfast guests, some have sought me out because I'm gluten-free. Others have kind of stumbled upon me because of the area and the availability, and have been willing to experience gluten-free. And then there's some who clearly see that it's a gluten-free retreat and don't want to be gluten-free and want to argue the point with me. So I kind of run the gamut of and people telling me that, you know, well, it, you know, I read on the internet that this is, you know, fine and gluten-free, when in actuality it isn't. So I've kind of had to define and hold my ground on what the standard is here, because people don't understand gluten. You know, at first I was offended. At first I was like, oh my God, you know, why are they, you know, don't they understand what gluten is? And actually, after seeing the Jimmy Kimmel spoof the other day, most people don't know what gluten is. And even people who are told they shouldn't be eating a gluten-free diet don't always know what gluten is. So I've had to take a different stance and educate people on, you know, again, those who just kind of stumble across me through the bed and breakfast avenue. They need a little more education, and that's fine. And sometimes they say, no, that's not what we're looking for. And sometimes they're like, yeah, that would be awesome. And you know, we make, you know, I, again, explain to them what the parameters are and help educate them. And if that's what they want, then they kind of get a cool little deal of getting a bed and breakfast and a free nutrition education along the way. So I feel like I'm doing a service. Even if people don't book here, I'm doing a service by educating them through the process of what gluten-free is.
You never know. One day they might tell someone else, hey, you know, I heard this place and I had a nice discussion with Jackie. Maybe you should go there. If you're gluten-free, you should go there.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. You know, people come here not, you know, being okay with the gluten-free. And then we'll start to talk over breakfast or while I'm cooking. Breakfast, well, you know, my father's got gout, or my mother-in-law's got, you know, autoimmune, and or, you know, so it opens up the conversation. People who wouldn't even consider this type of service for or type of setting for somebody else. And so it really is word of mouth, and it you know, it may be a slow process, but I think it's much needed. And I think as word gets out, there will be other places that offer this type of service. People need to be able to travel and not be afraid. People need to be able to come someplace. And again, you know, being that Palm Springs is a very tourist type of area, I know that it's needed here. And so that's part of why I came out here, aside from the fact that it's gorgeous and tranquil and quiet. We have the most amazing healing waters anywhere in the world. Well, I don't know about anywhere. Top in the world. You know, our aquifers are top-notch. So I know that
Speaking of that, how do we find information about your place and your retreat?
The website is eatingforwellness.net.
Okay.
You can email me at eatingforwellness@yahoo.com, or you can call, and all the information is on the website. You can find me on Facebook at Eating for Wellness, or by my name, Jackie Chapman. And in all the usual places. So yeah, that's how you find me.
So it sounds like you're a busy lady, but I know where to stay next time I come to visit California.
Absolutely. And again, you know, it's a great place, even if you're just coming on vacation to Southern California. I'm 20 minutes from Joshua Tree, right outside of Palm Springs. It's some of the best natural resources that anybody could find. And so it's great for families. Again, if one person needs to be gluten-free, but the rest of the family doesn't, it's you know, it's a great environment for on all kinds of levels. So reach out, ask questions. If you don't see it on the website, everything is personalized. So if you have a question or an event that you think, well, it would be great to be in this area, feel free to reach out, because I do love answering questions.
Okay, in that case, I've got a couple for you. Simply, really, what type of people would benefit the best from attending one of your retreats?
I would say that people who have a high stress life and who are having a difficult time making a transition that need a little extra support. It suits a lot of people for a lot of different reasons because, again, the majority of the people that I get that come in from LA really just need relaxation and education. There's, again, people who come and they really they need a safe place to eat while they're on vacation. You know, so it serves that purpose as well. People who are struggling with eating disorders and disordered thinking around food, who really need a therapeutic retreat type setting, do very well here because it is the relaxing environment where people can talk about and I guess the parts I didn't talk about that qualifies me for this, and I spoke a little bit about it in the beginning, is I do have a master's degree in clinical psychology, and I did work for 15 years with people with eating disorder and drug addiction. So I have a real good handle on helping people make behavior changes that are kind of deep-seated. And so we do a lot of, again, kind of unraveling the reason why people are having such a difficult time making changes. So, I would say there was a few things I took kind of off my list of options of food. Those were anything containing high fructose corn syrup. That was the first one that I did right off the bat. Once you eliminate that, you know, kind of the basic high fructose corn syrup, trans fats, all those kinds of things, it limits a lot of your choices. And so once you eliminate just a few substances, no more ketchup, no more soda, you know, those kinds of things, which were kind of deal breakers for a lot of people. I could never, you know, diet soda was another one. When I gave up diet soda, it turned a corner for me. And so I gave up a lot of those kinds of processed foods before, again, I found paleo and gluten-free. So I think those were the freeing kinds of things, giving up packaged cereal. Again, high fructose corn syrup, or those sugar-laden types of foods that were comfort, like, you know, again, common foods like cereal and pasta and rice-a-roni, all those kinds of things kind of went out the door first. And once those were gone completely, like I said, I spent time being vegetarian and vegan, so I did a lot of grains and legumes and that kind of stuff, but I didn't really consider those processed foods. So it was making that kind of transition from the standard American processed food diet to the quote-unquote clean eating diet, I think was the biggest transition in mindset for me. And then everything was a variation from there. And I think for a lot of people, once they can let go of that processed food and convenience addiction that they have and that lifestyle, I think everything is a variation from there. Unless you have severe health issues or health concerns, then I think, you know, for some people, you have to go in more vigorously. And that's kind of the process that I'm at now. But when I first started off, it was about, I'm just not eating packaged stuff. I'm just not eating stuff with high fructose corn syrup. I'm, you know, just not eating fast food. I'm not, you know, those kinds of generalizations and bulk, you know, removal of foods was really helpful for me.
So do you have any last suggestions?
You know what? Enjoy your food. Enjoy your life.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, it's kind of simplistic. Everything else is a variation. Everything else is a degree of where you are at that moment. Nothing is, even a lifestyle is variable because life is variable. So really, enjoy your food, enjoy your life, enjoy your friends, enjoy your family. Create an environment that makes you happy and eat in that environment. That's how you feed yourself. You feed yourself from the inside, but you also feed yourself from the outside with the choices that you make. So the lifestyle is more than the food. It's more than, you know, it's more than what we think it is, but it's less complicated than we think it is. Enjoy your food, enjoy your life.
Excellent advice.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being on the show. And wish you lots of success with your program and that you can help a lot of people along the way.
I appreciate the opportunity, and I hope that if you make it to California that you come and visit.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Jackie.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day. Bye.